Hey, I'm Steph.
I'm Alex.
And this is Not Today.
And we're live.
Hello.
How are you?
So good. After taking 15 takes of our intro.
No, I think it might have been more.
We could not get it right.
We couldn't stop laughing.
It's just, once you get the sillies, you got the sillies for good.
Yeah, you do. And I think after three failed attempts at the intro, which just, we're not going to get it till 10 at least.
We should really just record one and have that be it. But we really
that's no fun.
Yeah, we got to have a little variation every time.
We try. I mean, I guess we also try to be the same, but whatever.
It is what it is. Anyway, was just ridiculous that we had to take 20 takes.
Yeah, I know. It's literally taken 10 minutes to start, but here we are. And I am excited for what we have in store today.
I do too. I think this is going to be a good episode. Do you want to know why it was chosen?
This is Patreon?
By me? Oh, no. This is not Patreon. I chose this. It's because we had a mouse.
Oh, yeah, that did happen.
We had a mouse, and so I needed to be reminded that other animals are worse.
I guess true. We are highly confident that one of the mice took a dance across your toes.
Oh, God.
In the middle of the night.
I liked the way you said that, but I hated when it happened.
Yeah. Oh, it was, the feeling. Ooh.
Yeah. It was unfortunately at the foot of our bed, and I did feel it with my little feet. So.
I can't believe it didn't come from my feet.
Just be lucky. Just be glad. I mean.
I am glad.
You are.
And then
lucky.
It was trying to steal my emergency packets.
It was like dragging this packet across the floor. It was really something. So,
and then it just disappeared into thin air.
It really did. And we had to live with that for a few days. We slept in the guest room for a few days because we couldn't sleep in our bed. We had a mouse in our bed. What are we supposed to do? Sleep with the mouse? I don't think so. So anyway, that is what inspired this animal survival episode. And I've got three intense stories for you. Would you like to begin?
Yes. What do we got for story number one?
Story number one is going to be about lions.
Okay.
Okay. So
it's giving zoo.
It's not giving zoo.
No.
It's giving actual South
Africa. Okay.
Yeah. It's giving zoo.
As the kids say.
Story number one is going to take place in the Mpumalanga province of South Africa.
I am so glad that you brought this name to me. Mpumalanga?
Are
you serious, actually?
I hope that's how... Yeah, I didn't make that up. What, are you crazy?
I don't know.
I did look up the pronunciation, so forgive me if this is incorrect, but yes, Mpumalanga.
Really? Oh my God, that's beautiful.
I know. The name means east, or literally the place where the sun rises, and it's in northeastern South Africa. But the main character of our story today is Gary Camacho, and he was a lion conservationist. Gary's pride lived on a reserve in South Africa's Mpumalanga province, as we know. 23-year-old Gary Camacho managed the reserve's lions, but one August afternoon in 1988, Gary had a bit of a problem. One of the lionesses was wounded, and she was pregnant. Because this female was injured, she was finding it hard to keep up with feeding with the rest of the pride, so she was eating less and was getting very hungry. Gary wanted to help her, but also he knew if he tried to treat her while the rest of the pride was around her, they could very easily tear him apart. So he came up with a plan to isolate this lioness in an enclosure that he built. His idea was he would lure her in there with some bait, and then he would close the door, keep her in there, and then he could treat her, and the rest of them would stay out of it. But before she had a chance to get to the meat inside the enclosure, the males in the pride got to it and went inside the enclosure with her. So all Gary could do at that point was wait for her to be in there by herself, and he didn't know when that was going to be.
Wait, is he just like sitting on top of the enclosure, like waiting to let the trap door down, or does he have like a remote?
No.
That he's going to snap it shut? Or like, what, is he just chilling by all these lions? Are they like cool with him?
No, they would eat him if they had the chance. But he had like other people that were on the team with him. They basically just like oversaw the lions and like made sure they were okay. But he had like a different place that he would be most of the time. It's just kind of like if someone saw this lioness go into the enclosure, they would tell him and he would go and like shut the door and then treat her.
Interesting. So the lioness has to be in there long enough for him to go back to it and also like hang out there while the rest of the pack leaves?
Yeah.
Okay.
But he wasn't far away. He was like somewhat nearby. But yeah, he would have to travel back to the enclosure and like close the door. But at this point, all he could do was wait for her to be in there by herself. So this took days. And days later, Gary was sitting down for lunch with his friends. And as he did, he took off his sidearm, which was his gun, like a belt with a gun in it, and like hung it on the side of the chair next to him so that he could be more comfortable as he ate with his friends. But just as they started eating, Gary got the news that the lioness was inside the enclosure, and she seemed to be by herself. If he wanted to treat her injury now, it was the time to do that. So without thinking twice, Gary got up from lunch to go and help, but he didn't realize that he had left his sidearm at the table. And that was really the only thing that could help him in the event of a lion attack.
Except these fists.
Except these fists?
Yeah.
You're going to punch a lion in the face? See how far that gets you.
At that point, what else you got?
No, literally. So he and his friends got in his Jeep to check on the lioness. And his plan was to quickly close the gates and isolate her in there so she could be treated. And 150 feet away from the enclosure gates, they saw the pride was hanging out in the shade and the lioness wasn't with them, which was a good sign. But when they pulled up to the enclosure, they saw that yes, she was in the enclosure, but so was one of the pride's aggressive young male lions, and it just so happened to be her offspring. Young male lions are much more unpredictable and aggressive, and he would attack if he felt threatened. And because he's like a young male, it does not take much to make him feel threatened. He's basically just like a normal teenage boy. Or teenage girl, so, hell.
Don't look him in the eye.
They got the crazy hormones.
They get
hormones.
Aggressive when they feel threatened.
Yeah, literally. They've got them crazy hormones going through them, and they're
sure.
Acting up.
But he's chilling with mom today.
Yeah, he was chilling with mom. But as soon as Gary and his friends go into that enclosure, who knows what he would do?
He might pull up.
He might. Gary knew this young male lion was always kind of agitated. He would constantly bark at anyone who got too close to him. Did you know that lions barked?
They bark?
I guess they're not just like always out here roaring. You know, they're not just like roaring.
I don't know. I feel like that has to be an aggressive thing that they do, but I would just laugh, you know, like the last moments before I get eaten. I'm like, it's fucking barking.
So I just Googled, do lions bark? And it says lions also communicate with other calls and sounds through short barks and grunts. These are quote unquote friendly calls, sometimes used to locate pride members who are not within their range of sight.
Oh, okay.
So according to Google, it's a friendly thing, but Gary knew that this lion was like kind of always looking to pick a fight. So didn't seem too friendly to Gary.
Okay.
So going into the enclosure with it, this lion, I mean, and trying to get it out was a dangerous move. But if he didn't treat the lioness, then she could die of gangrene. So Gary decided to try to force the male out by using his truck, kind of put his truck in between the lioness and the lion and also like kind of push him out a little bit. But the young lion wasn't easily intimidated and made it clear that he was not leaving. He looked at the movement of the vehicle and the people inside as a threat. And Gary was worried he was going to get agitated and psych out the lioness and the rest of the pride. So forcing him out with the truck didn't work. And Gary felt like he had to get out of the truck and try to force him out himself. So he's like, maybe if I get out and stand my ground, he'll just get intimidated and then run out.
Well,
interesting move by Gary. But he knows a lot more about lions than I do. So maybe he was right.
I don't think we would get to the point where we're interacting with lions this closely, period.
No, that's true.
This is where we're coming from.
That is true. But he did figure he would get out of the car and use the vehicle as protection. So he's like, okay, I'm going to get out, but I'm going to stand very close to the car in case something goes wrong. But he was hoping that after this standoff, the lion would just kind of leave. It was definitely a risky move, especially since Gary left his gun at the lunch table, although at that point he didn't realize that he had left his gun at the lunch table. And what Gary would soon discover was trying to get this young male out on foot was a very big mistake. Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples. The spring weather is coming, and that means so are my allergies. My runny nose and congestion is super annoying and inconvenient, but thankfully, Astapro has my back and my nose. Astapro is the first of its kind nasal allergy spray. It is the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray, and Astapro delivers full prescription strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing. I've used Astapro every time my nasal allergies have flared up this season, and I'm always amazed at how fast it kicks in. Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies. Young male lions are the biggest troublemakers, and they're not used to being in close proximity to people that are not inside a vehicle. So Gary's presence was starting to make this lion feel very threatened. Gary hadn't really thought that would happen. He thought the lion would just run out of the enclosure. But what made it even worse was this animal was in a fenced-in area while this was all happening, so he felt very cornered, which is usually when lions will attack out of fear. And that was when the lion started charging at Gary, like sprinting at him. Seeing this lion running at him, Gary was startled and he went to grab for his gun, but that's when he realized he had left it. And that was about all the time he had before this lion was like on him. So he knew he was in real trouble and he felt like this was the stupidest thing he could have done. And he frantically tried to get out of the lion's way, but it was too late. The lion jumped toward Gary. And thankfully, he stepped kind of out of the way because the lion was basically jumping to bite his upper body and head, but instead he latched onto Gary's leg.
Okay, I just have no idea how that happened, but good for Gary.
I think he like took steps back kind of thing.
Oh,
and it
okay.
was like jumping at him, but then he didn't get the head and upper body, he just got the leg.
Okay.
Okay, so his friends who were in the vehicle, because remember, Gary brought his friends.
Drive away.
No, they don't drive away. But they were also unarmed and they could only watch in horror as their friend was attacked by a lion. They couldn't do anything.
Go attack the lion.
Realistically, we know.
With the boys,
we
pull up on this lion. He's out of pocket right now.
You are really saying far too many slang
terms. Lenny the lion
is
out of pocket.
I need you to chill with the slang.
Slang? I don't know.
Pull up.
I feel like people.
Out of pocket.
That is exactly what's happening.
Okay.
I mean, they need to help him. How
That's
many of
true.
Them are there?
I think there's two friends in the back seat.
I mean, 3v1 lion. I don't know. How big are they?
It's a lion.
You get its legs, I'll get its neck.
Okay.
Back of the neck.
Since Gary had nothing to defend himself, he tried to push the lion's head down and away from himself and keep him down, but that didn't really work. The bite felt like a vise had been clamped around his leg. A lion's jaws can clamp down with nearly 900 pounds of pressure, which is enough to snap the spine of most of its prey with ease. The lion was trying to control Gary and immobilize him so that he could get to a more vital area. Gary was worried that just outside the enclosure, the pride could smell the blood and hear his screams, which would attract them. You know, because if they hear a dying animal or person and smell blood, they're like, cool, dinner.
Yeah.
You know, so the pride had started becoming restless. And if they joined in on the attack of Gary, he was surely toast.
Yeah.
He frantically tried to pry open this lion's jaws, but the lion's jaws were already shut too tightly that there was no getting him off. So Gary's friend tried to find anything they had in the car to use it as a weapon, but there was nothing in the Jeep. The longer the attack went on, the more agitated the other lions became. Gary could see that the rest of the pride was becoming interested in the attack and were starting to make their way toward the enclosure. So Gary screamed to his friends in the car to keep the rest of the pride away. There would be no way he could fend off the rest of them if they decided to join in. My thought that I just had was, if this young male lion is preoccupied attacking Gary and the rest of them are outside of the enclosure, you could just shut the gate.
That's what I was thinking as well.
Right? Like, if you're not going to jump on the back of this lion and, like, pry it off your friend, which would never work anyway, shut the gate, right?
Yeah. But I'm just imagining, like, them taking it, like, hit, like, punching it, but it just doesn't even feel it.
Well, Gary does that at some point. He starts punching this lion in the head and it's not doing anything.
Well, I mean, like, yeah, what else do you do?
Exactly. But also, I guess this friend couldn't shut the gate, or there was some reason why that wasn't a possibility. But one of Gary's friends, Johan, jumped out of the car and started throwing branches and rocks at the rest of the pride as they got closer, which incredibly kept them away.
Rocks and branches.
Yeah. But Gary's leg was still locked in this lion's mouth, and the rocks and branches would only keep them away for so long. Desperate, Gary went after the lion's most vulnerable spot, his eyes and nose. But just as Gary jabbed its eyes, the lion began fighting back. He started to tear Gary's arms apart with its razor-sharp claws. And the lion's claws went through his flesh like a hot knife on butter. That's how sharp they are. Which is awful, but what can be even more dangerous is the infections caused by these scratches and, like, tear marks. A lion's claws carry bacteria that can cause tumors, inflammation of the heart, and kidney failure. Isn't that crazy?
What are they doing with their paws all day?
I guess they're incredibly dirty. I mean, they're literally tearing through, like, carcasses and stuff.
Tumors from claws. Yeah, that's crazy.
That one was really interesting to me. I didn't know that you could get a tumor from, like, bacteria from a claw. That's so strange.
Yeah, I mean, their paws are massive, right?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And they never wash their paws.
No, I was going to make that joke.
They never use soap.
No.
Gary said that years later, like when he was talking about this attack later on, that he can still remember the sound of his flesh ripping.
How do you ever forget that, though?
Yeah, I never would have thought that flesh ripping makes a sound. I guess how could it not? But, like, that was never something I would have thought on my own.
Yeah, no. Well, nobody ever thinks about ripping flesh day to day, you know?
You would hope not, right? But he said he could literally see his skin stretching and ripping, and he could hear it.
Oh, my God.
Isn't that one of the most terrible things you could ever think about? So Johan was starting to lose the battle with keeping the lions away, and he was screaming to Gary that he couldn't keep them back any longer. So with nothing else to throw at the lions, he was terrified for his life, and he had to retreat back into the vehicle. And I don't really blame him. You know, it's like, you can't really do anything.
Yeah, I mean,
and you don't want to die yourself.
No, you know? I mean, what's the other option? Drive the car at them?
Yeah, but I mean, that wouldn't really do too much. You can't run over the one on Gary.
Yeah.
Anyway, Gary knew that he was very close to death, especially if those other lions joined in. So he did everything he could to free himself from the lion's jaws. He began punching the lion in the eye as hard as he could, but still wouldn't let go. And he went back and forth between punching the lion and jabbing it in the eye. And at that point, the lion loosened its grip just a little bit, which Gary took full advantage of. It wasn't because he had been, like, poking it in the eye and, like, punching it in the head. It was because this lion was trying to reposition himself to, like, really take the kill down kind of thing. Mm. And when he opened his mouth, Gary pulled his leg away as quickly as possible and ran into the truck with his friends. So I guess
he got away.
Yeah, he managed to, like, get up real quick. I guess the adrenaline was like,
oh yeah,
working overtime.
Now or never, Gary.
Yeah. So that was the perfect moment for him to escape, because not 5 seconds later, the rest of the pride arrived.
Oh my God. I mean, this is something you just, like, wake up from in a sweat.
Right? That's a nightmare. Truly.
Just in time from the rest of the pride?
Yes. Yeah. And that was just a young lion that was on him. I mean, the adult males are much bigger. And there were multiple of them.
Where, like, the whole time is, where's the lion he was trying to treat?
The lioness? She was kind of sitting.
Just, like, hanging out?
Yeah, she was kind of just sitting off to the side. Yeah. I mean, she was injured.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just crazy that, like, death is occurring right next to her and she's just chilling.
Licking her paw. Yeah. She's hanging. But so he made it into the car with 5 seconds to spare. and he hopped into the driver's seat where he had been when they drove into the enclosure. And since so much adrenaline was coursing through his veins, he just started driving away, even though his leg had just been like torn apart and his arms were torn apart. Like he was not doing well.
Yeah, get out.
He just started driving.
Yeah.
He wasn't feeling any of the pain at that point or really grasping how injured he was. Until one of his friends told him that he should just pull over and they could drive. Like, they're like, we don't have to open the doors. We can just switch seats real quick and I'll drive. How about that? And so only then did he really look down and see what shape he was actually in. When he looked down, he saw the big piece of flesh hanging out of the back of his leg that was covered in blood, and there had been tendons ripped out of his arm, and he couldn't use his left hand properly because of it.
Oh my God. The word flesh just puts another level to it.
Hunk of flesh hanging.
Yeah.
Like
that phrase is disgusting.
It's not the best phrase ever. So Johan had Gary pull over and they transferred Gary to the back seat with his other friend while Johan sped to the hospital. It would take them a good half an hour to get to the nearest hospital. Not a good time.
For half an hour.
Yeah.
It's a long time.
It is.
You know, I've driven to the hospital. It took 40 minutes when I dislocated my shoulder.
Really? It took 40 minutes?
Yeah.
Oh, at the lake. You've dislocated it so many times.
I know. It's no longer noteworthy. It's hard to keep track of. But yeah, I mean, that sucked.
Yeah, because, and that's nothing compared to being torn apart.
I don't have a hunk of flesh hanging out. I mean, what do you even talk about on the way there? That's what I thought of, like, when I was going to the hospital.
So,
it was like, it's just, you have 40 minutes, then you're just in excruciating pain. Do you just say nothing?
So, what are you guys doing this weekend?
Cracking jokes.
Got any cool plans?
Well, like, it kind of looks like a filet mignon if you shake
it. Oh, God. Gross. It's funny that you say that because once Gary was on the way to the hospital, he said he started feeling really awkward, as he put it. But I think that was just kind of like a interesting word choice to use. I don't know that he necessarily meant what you were saying, but his injuries really started to set in and he was losing blood. So he just felt really nauseous and dizzy.
Yeah.
He got more than 50 stitches in his leg and arm, and he was lucky to be alive. There were a number of things that saved his life that day, like the fact that the lion was young and inexperienced, and the fact that he saw the lion coming at him and had enough time to jump backwards so that the lion didn't just immediately latch onto his head, because that would have been worse. And weeks later, Gary returned to work on the reserve.
Yeah, this is the thing about people who deal with animals that are dangerous. They don't give a shit. I mean,
It's their passion.
It's their passion. That's what they want to do. And they will not be stopped.
They won't.
Gary will not be stopped.
And the kicker of it all is the lioness's wounds healed on their own. And she gave birth to a healthy litter.
You know, you try to help people. You try to help lions. This is what happens.
This is what you get. Yeah. Gary's close brush with death made him realize that on the savannah, you can never let your guard down. He is way more cautious now than he was because he got way too comfortable with those animals before, but now he knows what can go wrong. And I found it interesting that lions kill 200 humans per year. That's a statistic I saw.
That seems incredibly low. The entirety of Africa, they only kill 200 people?
I thought it sounded kind of like a lot.
I mean, how many people live in Africa, Queen? Like,
well, a lot.
Millions.
But, well, yeah, I guess when you put it like that, but
they'd be having people.
Yeah, but like how many people are just like chilling with the lions? Like there are major cities and stuff.
Oh, I know. I'm just saying, like,
not everyone's just on the savannah.
I mean, Africa's huge.
Right.
And there are a lot of people on the savannah.
I guess. For all the people that are like interacting with lions, I figured, or at least to me, it sounded like kind of a lot, 200. But I guess 200 isn't a large number when you think about the amount of people that are there. So you're right. But still.
Yeah, I am right.
200 lives every year? That's a lot of lives.
That's too many. I mean, they all matter. I'm just saying, you know,
yes.
I'm the numbers guy.
Okay? I understand.
Don't come for me.
You're the numbers guy. But that is the end of story number one. And that is Gary Camacho's close brush with a lion.
Yeah, I mean, that's insane. I mean, he got really lucky and I don't know. I can't believe that the lion just kind of, you know, let up and he was able to just get away.
Yeah, not only pull his leg out, but run into the truck.
And then the lioness didn't even jump in. And then her wounds healed on their own.
Yeah, that's what sucks the most, I think. I mean, yeah. It's great. I'm glad that she lived and had a healthy litter or whatever. But, like, none of this had to happen. She would have been fine.
Well, I don't know. Maybe it taught him a good lesson. You know,
it did. Never
took any big risks after that.
Yeah, it did teach him a lesson, and he said that. But,
and you know what? I'm sure that he would be happy that the lion went on to give birth, you know?
No doubt. Clearly, he cares about them a lot. But anyway, that's his story. On to story number two. We're going to be heading to a golf course.
Oh, my heaven.
Your happy place. The main character of this story is Ike Monreal.
Okay.
The Tampa Palms Golf and Country Club is a place where people come to relax and enjoy. Typically, that's all that happens there. But although the place is beautiful and calming for its visitors, the course is full of ponds and lakes, which are full of alligators.
Oh, yeah. Now, this is fun. Have you ever been on a golf course in Florida?
No. Why would I have ever?
I just wanted to ask.
Okay.
But I was pretty sure the answer is no. This is nuts. They're everywhere.
I know.
Like, you know, it's not uncommon to see like a 7-foot alligator.
Oh,
massive,
yeah.
Boy.
Yeah.
You know, on the course. And it's just so crazy because it's just packed with retirees.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know?
Old women and
the
old
easiest
men.
Of prey.
Yeah.
You know? So it's just, it is kind of surreal when you see a really massive one and you just, it's basically like a dinosaur.
Yeah.
And you're just trying to, you know, enjoy golf.
Yeah.
You're out there for a hobby.
Right.
And now you're like close to death.
Yeah.
And you take one wrong step, you're screwed.
That's true. I mean, they usually hang out just like in the water, right?
Yeah. They're usually not aggressive, but I mean,
right. Still,
if you just, because they're good at hiding. I mean, if you go by the water looking for your ball.
That's the thing, is that you could never go look for your ball. If it goes near the water.
You just let it go.
You let it go.
I'm looking.
You're not
like take a look-see.
Playing in a competition or like in whatever it's called.
Well, here's the backup plan. We all remember the crocodile flap, okay?
Do we all remember?
It's the release button that they have in their throat.
Do alligators have a crocodile flap?
They're the same family.
Okay.
I'm
so
confident.
Would you explain what the crocodile flap is for those who don't know?
What number episode was that?
That was like early on. That was under 100.
This poor man got dragged under by a crocodile, I think on the Zambezi.
Yeah, it was the Zambezi.
On the Zambezi River.
Yeah.
And I told that story.
Did you?
Back when I used to tell stories.
There you go.
And he was being drowned.
Right.
And he just reached his hand down this crocodile's throat.
Yeah.
And he just like tried to rip its throat open.
Yeah, there's
like,
essentially
shoved his hand in there.
A release button.
And he's like, yeah, there was like this little flap that they have at the back of their throat. So he just pulled on that and it let go of him. And
yeah.
He survived.
Well, I guess this person didn't know about the crocodile flap. So that sucks. But anyway, even though golfers know that alligators are there because they are very common in Florida, you can't always see them. Like you said, they are good at hiding. And 62-year-old Ike Monreal owned a golf ball retrieval service.
Wait, that's a service?
Yep. This is a real thing that people go into the water and they retrieve as many golf balls as they can. And it's like, I think Ike was doing it for like 8 cents a ball. Yeah, he was. So normally
that sounds so little.
Normally he would go with one of his sons, but that day he would be diving alone. And Ike said he would get
No. You need 100 balls to make $8. What year is this?
This happened on April 26, 2008 in Tampa, Florida.
That is not enough money, Ike.
So Ike said he would get as many as 12,000 balls in one single day.
Okay, maybe it's enough money.
Right. So he had been doing that job for the past 15 years, and he knew how dangerous the job could be. But nothing too severe had ever happened to him. He had definitely had times where he didn't know an alligator was in the water with him, and he would get nudged by one. He said sometimes they'll stay under the water for 15 to 20 minutes at a time. So he's been bumped, he's been nipped, he's been tail whipped before. Almost everyone he knew in that profession has had close calls like that. But the job gets even more dangerous in the hot weather, because alligator activity is related to temperature.
Yeah, I mean, they're cold-blooded bitches.
Sure. So when it gets hot, alligators are trying to feed a lot more, and they become more aggressive.
Really? Okay. I thought they would, like, just stay in the water to keep cold.
No, they are trying to, like,
eat
more. Yeah.
Okay.
Which, of course, is a big concern for Ike, and it was a hot day. When When he approached the lake, he would always scan it first to see if he was the only thing in there. But like I just mentioned, sometimes they're underwater for 20 minutes at a time, and you don't always know. And that day, as he scanned over the pond at hole 13, he saw a very familiar sight, a 7 to 7.5 foot gator that was almost always in that pond. He's seen this gator before, it's kind of its territory, but even though that gator was there on the outskirts of the pond, he still waded in to retrieve whatever balls were in there, because, like I said, he had kind of known this alligator. So he's like, all right, I think if he's over there, he's just going to be chilling, you know? It's going to be fine. He wasn't super concerned. Oh, it wasn't a guy. It was a female alligator, excuse me. Females do occasionally attack people, but it's not nearly as common as males.
Damn, you just misgendered the alligator.
It's 2024. I'm so sorry, everyone. But what he didn't know was that that 7.5 foot gator was not the only one in that small pond that day. There was another 10 foot, 400 pound male gator in there as well.
400 pounds?
10 foot, 10 feet. Think about 10 feet.
Goddamn log.
Bigger.
Yeah.
Yeah. Generally, the larger the alligator, the greater the risk.
Did you have to put that in there?
You know, I gotta lay it out for everyone.
When they be big, they be dangerous.
It be bad. Mm. Listen, I'm a storyteller, okay? Sue me.
You're really painting that picture.
And that's my job. And that's literally my job. So yeah, I am.
Things in mirror may be closer than they appear.
All right. So Ike didn't know he was in there because he was beneath the murky water. So he went along with his job of retrieving balls from the bottom of the pond. And the murky water had made it impossible for Ike to see the 10-foot gator coming right at him. He had just about finished retrieving balls in that pond, and he was getting ready to get out when the massive alligator moved in. All of a sudden, Ike felt a searing pain shoot down his arm. There was an unbelievable amount of force that came down, accompanied by excruciating pain. Ike knew he was in a life or death situation immediately. The alligator had slammed down on Ike's shoulder with 2,000 pounds of pressure. That's more than the lion. The lion was 900. This is 2,000.
On the shoulder.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Dude.
Its teeth were piercing the three layers of his wetsuit and clothing that he was wearing to keep warm. And alligator teeth will tear you apart, but they won't completely sever your limbs like shark's teeth will do. They are mainly made for holding on. So Ike said on a scale from 1 to 10, the pain was an 11.
I believe it, Ike.
Yeah.
My gosh.
He had never felt that kind of pain in his life. When alligators can't swallow something, they'll try to spin and rip off pieces. But one quick spin and Ike knew his arm would be ripped off. He couldn't bring his arm back to his body, so he thought at that moment he had already lost his arm because everything was just in so much pain that he's like, okay, I must not have an arm anymore.
Wow. I mean, you're underwater. How disorienting.
Oh, he wasn't under the water yet because the alligator had come up and was like on his shoulder, and he was staring at this 10-foot gator in the eye. Like its eye was right next to him.
Whoa.
So he was literally looking at him.
Are they both fully submerged or he's out of the water? So I assumed he was in the water.
Yeah, so he was like kind of in the water, like up to his shoulder basically, because he was like trying to feel around on the bottom for balls, and because he was like hunched over, the alligator came over and snapped onto his shoulder, but the alligator's head came out of the water and was like, he was like looking at its eye.
Did it wink at him?
Yeah, it batted its eyelashes.
How fucking morbid is that? Like the last thing you see is a gator winking at you.
I mean, a dark, beady eyeball. That's the worst thing ever. It's lifeless.
Yeah.
So Ike started to get himself to his feet to try to make it back to the bank. And incredibly, he was able to start crawling toward the shore while the alligator was still attached to his shoulder.
He pulled a 400-pound gator to the shore?
Adrenaline is a hell of a drug.
That, but I mean, he's got to be a pretty strong dude.
Yeah, he was a big guy.
Yeah.
So seeing two golfers nearby, Ike desperately called out for help. And when they saw him, they immediately ran over to the pond and could barely believe what they were seeing. They were desperate to help him, but they didn't know what to do.
Whack that thing with your clubs, guys. Well,
they were kind of still in the middle of the pond, like enough that they couldn't really reach him. And they weren't going to get in the water with that thing.
Oh, fuck no. Okay, so I thought you said he pulled it out of the water.
No, he was starting, they were like really deep into the pond and he had started moving toward the shore, but he wasn't out of the water yet.
Okay.
Yeah. So one of them hit their club into the water to splash, hoping that it would distract the gator while the other one called for help. Meanwhile, Ike knew he had to keep his head above the water because he could easily drown if he wasn't ripped apart first. But the gator was way too strong, so before long, Ike disappeared underneath the water. An alligator will try to drag its prey out to deeper water and drown them. And then, once their prey is drowned, they will eat at their leisure. Like, they don't want to eat you while you're fighting them. That's not very chill. So thankfully for Ike, he had his scuba suit on, and he still had oxygen, even under the water. So he knew he had to keep that regulator in his mouth, or he would lose consciousness and drown. Isn't that so lucky? He had his oxygen in his mouth.
In his mouth already, yeah.
Crazy. Like, you can't be drowned because you have a tank.
Like, yeah, no, I have to wonder, like, how confused the alligator is.
Right, like,
he's been here for 20 minutes.
This thing really won't drown.
Still shaking.
Is this a fish? Like,
what is this a fish?
Yeah. So Ike knew he had to do something. His shoulder was as far back into the gator's jaw as it could go. Like, his arm was completely in this gator's mouth.
Find that flap, baby.
Crocodile flap. So he used his other arm to reach around the gator's snout and press his thumb into the alligator's eye, since that's the most vulnerable part of the alligator, which we heard about in story number one. I guess that's a really good tactic, is like, go for the eyes, you know?
Yeah, eyes and snout.
Yeah.
Although they don't really have snout.
Not the alligator, no.
No.
That was more so for the lion. But the alligator, you gotta jam in the eye. But even with jamming his thumb in its eye, it was barely phased. An alligator might expect to have some kind of pressure to its eye when it grabs a large prey. So Ike once again reached around and stuck his thumb as far into the alligator's eye as he could. And that move definitely stunned the alligator, which was when he went ballistic. The bite got worse, like harder, and that's when he tried to roll with Ike. Ike was in so much pain that he couldn't keep his thumb in its eye. And that's when he was thinking that this may be the last moment that he is alive. He saw his wife and his three sons looking down at him. But that was when he told himself he wasn't going to die out there. He couldn't give up. Whatever it took, he was going to get out of that pond. Luckily for Ike, the struggle brought the two of them into the shallows, and Ike was able to get a foothold, like in the sand. So he was able to kind of like stand back up. He was able to put his foot down and stop the gator from rolling him in the water. He wasn't going to let that gator drown him. And it was in that moment that he went in for another attack. He took a deep breath and again jammed his thumb into the gator's eye socket as far as it would go. He said he swear he got halfway to the gator's brain. That's how much he jammed into his eye.
I mean, you gotta try and hit brain.
Right. And against all odds, the alligator's jaw snapped open and it released Ike. Ike didn't know how long he would have, so he took that quick opportunity to try to get himself out of the water. The alligator definitely did not like that Ike was fighting back and had retreated, so Ike desperately tried to get himself out of the water with the help of the other golfers. And Ike told him as he was being pulled out, "Just make sure you look behind me and he isn't coming out of the water after me, because I can't handle another bite."
And amen, Ike.
Yeah.
I mean, once you're on land, you know. Get those golf clubs, guys. I mean...
But how much would that do? Not much. A golf club versus a 10-foot, 400-pound gator?
Give it a shot?
Yeah, well,
I mean, I can't feel good.
No, but like you said, they're kind of like dinosaurs.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah. The alligator swam away, thankfully, and went into the deeper part of the pond, which was when Ike knew that he was going to be okay. The alligator had dislocated his shoulder, and it wasn't attached anymore. There were teeth holes all over his shoulder and arm, about an inch and a half deep. Things were bad, but they could have been much worse, because Ike's 17-year-old son had been scheduled to work that day, and if that alligator had attacked him, it would have been a much different outcome. Ike said his son didn't have the size or the experience he had to handle that situation, so he knows that he would have lost his son, if that was the case. Ike may never fully regain the use of his arm, but he is alive. And he and his sons have never returned to the water since the attack.
And you know what? I'm on Team Ike here.
Yeah.
Never again.
I understand that one.
I was about to back up and say that this is such a ridiculous job, kind of.
It because is. In Florida, of all places?
In Florida, you're really risking your life. You're saying that it's kind of a somewhat regular occasion to brush arms with a gator.
That's what he was saying.
To just have it bump you?
Yeah, he said he would get bumped, nipped, tail whipped.
Tail whipped.
Whatever the hell nipped means.
For what? Like, I mean, like a paycheck?
How does an alligator nip you and not like attack you?
Yeah, I don't know. But I'm saying it's all for people who don't want to pay full price for new balls. Right. You know what? In this like stupid game.
Yeah, just a bunch of cheap fucks.
Is this not what it's for?
Yeah.
I mean, back up, it's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah. But I mean, he had been doing the job for, I think I said 15 years or something. It was a family business. Clearly, he had found success in that, you know?
Oh, I'm sure. And I'm sure it paid the bills well. But I'm just saying, it's kind of a silly thing to risk your life for, seemingly. I mean,
yeah, that's definitely like one thing. I don't know. I mean, I know there are plenty of jobs that are very risky, but there are certain things that you can do to like keep yourself safer. Like when you're working with like heavy machinery, you're like trained to, you know, not hurt yourself. But with an alligator, it's like so unpredictable. I mean, it's semi-predictable. Like, you know generally what they do, but then you go into a pond where you don't see a 10-foot alligator because it's under the water, and then you get attacked. Like, that's, you can't really plan for that.
Yeah. You know, there's dangerous jobs like, I don't know, underwater construction.
Yeah.
Or like building a bridge. But at least those, you're kind of like, oh, we need bridges.
Right.
You know?
We don't necessarily need golf balls.
Yeah. Old golf balls.
That's true. So anyway, he lived, which is great. We love to hear that. But here's the thing. 4 hours later after the attack, licensed trappers caught an 8-foot alligator from the lake 50 feet from the scene of the crime. Once alligators attack someone, they're exponentially more likely to attack again. So they had to take care of that. But Ike didn't believe they got the gator that attacked him because that gator was bigger than 8 feet, which means the gator that got Ike is still out there. But you know what I learned when I was researching this? Crocodiles are, I didn't realize the size difference in crocodiles and alligators. Crocodiles can get up to like 20 feet or something crazy like that. Like, they get massive.
Yeah.
So that 10-foot alligator, which seems huge, is like small potatoes compared to a gator.
Or croc.
Or yeah, you mean? A croc. So anyway,
I mean, 20 feet.
Crocodiles are terrifying.
100% a dinosaur.
Well, oh, yeah.
A water dino.
Oh my God, yeah. And they're like saltwater too. Saltwater crocodile. Oof. Those are even more dangerous.
No, thank you.
Terrible. Anyway, that's story number two. Shall we move on to our final story, number three?
Yes, let's do it.
Gorgeous. We're going to be talking about Anne Yella? Hella? Sorry.
Just like slowly giving up through the pronunciation.
In parentheses, sorry. Okay. Anne was a tomboy as a child. Growing up in Apple Valley, Minnesota, her parents limited her to only 1 hour of television a day. So she and her siblings were encouraged to go outside and find their own fun.
Go touch grass.
Touch grass, Anne. And she did. She grew up to be a very strong and independent woman and shocked her family when she enlisted in the Marine Corps. She was stationed in Southern California, which was perfect for her since she loved being outside. She worked as a hydraulics mechanic on helicopters, which was something she really enjoyed doing. During her time at that job, Anne really fell in love with California since she was able to be outside year-round. One of her favorite things to do was to go mountain biking on the many hikes around Southern California. She even found her husband, James, through a mountain biking competition they both did. They had seen each other while they were riding, and once they got off the trail, the two of them began talking and they hit it off. They soon discovered they had some mutual friends, and from there, their relationship took off. James said he knew Anne was the woman he was going to marry within a week of knowing her. So love at first sight, baby.
I don't believe him. I'm sorry. I mean, it sounds so cute, but like, you know a person for a week and you're like, yep, that's it. You've talked 5 times? That's just insane to me.
Okay. Old man.
Old man, cynical boy. That's me. That's my perspective.
Quit yapping. After about 5 weeks, he popped the question and the two got married.
5 weeks? I guess he fucking knew.
Yeah. When you know, you know. You know?
I respect the conviction.
When you know, you know, you know. All right. So one of her favorite mountain biking rides was through Cactus Hill Trail, which was a narrow winding path in Whiting Ranch Wilderness Park. Her favorite biking partner was a woman named Debbie Nichols. They were both hardcore riders who were very no-nonsense. They both liked to have fun, but their idea of fun was to get out there and ride. So they weren't like leisurely pedaling and just like chatting as they went. They were like riding. And then they'd be like, okay, meet you at the bottom kind of thing. On Thursday, January 8th, 2004, Anne and Debbie set out for a short ride after work. Their plan was to do a quick 45-minute loop and take Cactus Hill Trail for a fast ride back down the mountain. Anne was speeding ahead of Debbie down the trail when she came upon another rider who was stopped on the trail standing next to an empty bike. When she asked him if everything was okay, he told her he had found an abandoned bike. And when he told her that, Anne thought he must have just been messing with her, so she continued riding forward without thinking much of what he had just told her. Anne pushed ahead, canoeing down the winding trail ahead of Debbie. She came up over a small hill and was just about to head down on the final descent of the trail when she caught the glimpse of some movement beside her. Her first thought was that she had just startled a deer and that it was going to jump across the trail in front of her. But before she could even really finish that thought, she felt a very strong impact as she was knocked to the ground and off her bike. She immediately felt the animal grab a hold of her, and she knew that this wasn't a deer, it was a mountain lion. Mountain lions, or cougars, can leap up to 40 feet to attack their prey.
40 feet?
Yeah. They hunt by stealth and ambush. They hit their prey hard and then latch on with their claws and then kill animals by suffocation.
Okay, I didn't know that detail, but I did know that if you see a cougar, it's not hunting you.
Yeah, well, she didn't. It just completely jumped at her and
like blindsided. So she was moving too.
Oh, yeah, she was riding. So
it probably like just clotheslined her.
Yeah, she was riding fast down the mountain. Like she was going downhill. Ugh. And it jumped at her and knocked her off the bike and immediately latched onto her.
Yeah, you have no chance.
Right. Anne said the impact of the animal jumping on her was like getting hit by a car. And once she was on the ground, the lion's razor-sharp claws ripped into her shoulders and it bit down on the back of her neck. The lion had initially bit her on the back of the neck, but Anne could tell that it was making an effort to get around to the front of her because, you know, suffocation. So it wanted to get her throat. He would grab her by the neck and then drag her a foot or two and then readjust to, like, turn her.
Yeah, I mean, they're...
I guess that's, like, what they do, but it's just...
little monsters.
Creepy to think about. One of the times that this lion was readjusting, it clamped down on her right ear, completely separating it from her skull. He readjusted again, and that time he clamped down on the left side of her face. So his upper fangs came down on her face, breaking her nose and going into her upper lip. And then the lower fangs went into her cheek. So this cougar is literally eating her face, kind of. Ugh. I mean, he's not really like eating it. He's more trying to like readjust her to get to her throat, but like fangs in the face.
Please tell me Debbie rides in and just rams this cougar with her bike.
Oh, Debbie comes in. But let's back up just a little bit because Debbie isn't here quite yet. So Anne could feel her face being peeled away. Is what she said.
Oh.
Hate to think about that. A lion can pick up prey that weighs more than its own body weight and run with it, jump with it, carry it for half a mile, and even carry it over fences in the process. So if this mountain lion wanted to, it could carry Anne over a fence with her face in its mouth. Isn't that scary?
Yeah. There's really just little hope with the mountain lion. You can't see it before it attacks you. And once it's got you... you're fucked.
Kinda. So what was so shocking to Anne was how easily this animal was able to tear through her. It felt like it was nothing for this mountain lion. The pain was so great that Anne thought to herself that she would rather die than continue going through that attack. But then her mind flashed to James, and she knew he would want her to fight. In that instant, she switched into fight back mode. Her husband James was a martial artist, and he had taught his wife a few moves. So although she felt hopeless and overpowered, she began punching with her right arm over her shoulder, trying to punch this cougar in the face. But the blows had absolutely no effect on the animal at all. It had only been seconds since the attack had started, but for Anne, it was as if time was standing still. Meanwhile, Debbie, who had been ways behind Anne on the trail, finally got closer to the attack and began hearing this terrible screaming sound. As she pulled up, she saw Anne underneath this mountain lion as she was being mauled and had no idea what to do. Anne knew this mountain lion had her face in its mouth, but as she was looking up, she could see Debbie standing behind the mountain lion with the look of terror on her face. And Anne said more than anything, Debbie looked angry. Debbie reacted with blind rage, and the only weapon she had was her bike. So she picked up her bike and threw it at the mountain lion, thinking surely that that would do something, but it didn't. It had no effect on the animal, and it had begun dragging Anne by her head down into a ravine because it wanted dinner. But before the mountain lion could pull her further down, Debbie grabbed onto Anne's calf and pulled back. So there was basically a tug of war going on between Debbie and a mountain lion, and Anne was the rope.
Oh my God, I mean, just how painful.
Yeah, that's I could not even imagine it if I tried, you know, like the actual sensation of that.
Yeah, let's move on.
Yeah, let's not. Hey, let's actually not.
I'm like, I feel really bad for her, but God, do I not want to think about that.
Fair. That's very fair. So Debbie at the time was a mother and grandmother, and it's possible that her maternal instincts fueled her blind rage and courage.
Debbie's a grandmother?
Debbie is a grandmother, and she's fighting a mountain lion.
Dude, tell me.
Pretty hardcore.
You go to school talking about grandma fighting a mountain lion? You're the coolest kid in school.
Oh my God, yeah. Your show and tell? Grandma. This is my grandma. She fought a mountain lion.
Grandma, she literally karate chopped a mountain lion in between the eyes.
And it ran away.
Dead.
Yeah.
It's dead now.
You should see the mountain lion.
Yeah, that's got to be Anne's line when she gets out of this.
Right, exactly. As Debbie pulled on Anne's leg to slow the lion's progress, she could feel just how strong this mountain lion was. She couldn't believe that it was able to pull both of them, even with her heels digging into the dirt. It was terrible. Debbie watched as the lion tore her friend's face wide open, and there was nothing she could do but hold on. Debbie screamed to Anne that she wasn't going to let go, even though by holding on to Anne's leg, she was putting herself in direct danger of becoming this mountain lion's next target. But throughout everything, the lion maintained its laser focus on Anne and getting her where he wanted her. Anne felt the lion making its way toward her throat, which she knew would be the end for her. Something she learned in martial arts was if someone is going for a choke, you're supposed to tuck your chin to your shoulder to try to close the gap. That way they can't choke you. So that's what Anne was trying to do. She was trying to put her head in a position that made it so the lion couldn't get to her neck. But as soon as he grabbed onto the front of her throat, his bite came down like a vice. Right away, things started to go black. She remembered looking at Debbie and basically saying goodbye to her friend, and recognizing that this was going to be the end of her life before everything went black. That was the last thing she remembered of the attack. Debbie was still holding on to Anne's leg for her life, but she knew that help needed to come quick. This wasn't a situation that could have gone on for very long. And thankfully for them, other mountain bikers appeared on the trail above them. Debbie screamed at the two men to do something, and that was when they picked up rocks and began throwing them. One of the rocks hit the mountain lion in the back of the neck, and it took off running.
Really?
Yeah. One of the men thankfully had cell service, even though that trail almost never has any signal, and he was able to call for help. He managed to call 911 and tell them that a woman had been attacked by a mountain lion. Meanwhile, Debbie was with Anne, asking if she could hear her and telling her to stay with them. Anne did regain some consciousness in that moment, and she was shocked that she was still alive. She remembers she was laying on her back and she couldn't get in any air. She felt like she was drowning. She knew that she most likely was drowning in her own blood, which is what was happening.
Ugh.
The three of them got Anne off the ground and on her feet, and as she stood up, she felt the weight of her cheek as it hung off of her face.
It's so much worse when it's on the face.
It's bad everywhere, but the face is bad. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can we just take a moment for Debbie? Because not many people would have the courage to do what Debbie did.
Yeah, I'm playing tug of war with a cougar.
With her friend as the rope.
I'll tell you this, she's got nerves of steel.
Yeah, she does.
Playing tug of war with a cougar.
Yeah, and she's a grandmother. What grandmother do you know that could play tug of war with a lion?
My grandma.
Shit, maybe your grandmother. Like my actually.
Grandma, actually.
Actually, wait.
Shout out to Grandma Sue.
Grandma Sue could 100%. She would be doing tug of war with a mountain lion.
I mean, she wouldn't go down without a fight. I've told stories about her.
Yeah,
she,
definitely.
But I will remind the audience that she got hit by a truck, broke her hip, and then at the ER, when they asked her how much pain she was in, I think she said like a 3 or 4.
I mean, that woman, an icon.
You know, hard to stop her.
Yeah. But anyway.
Oh, I mean, yeah. There's nerves of steel from Debbie.
Do you want a really disgusting detail?
Yes and no.
Okay. So you know how I said it, her cheek was hanging from her face?
Sure.
Okay. So she said it almost felt like a steak was hanging off of her face.
Okay.
From the end of her eyebrow in a big crescent down to her chin was a big flap of her face that was peeled back all the way to her nose.
Oh my God.
So basically half of her face was peeled away.
Poor woman. I mean, poor Anne. Jeez. I mean, no chance.
By herself? No.
No chance.
No. Yeah. The three of them who were tending to Anne knew that the animal was still out there, but they weren't sure where it was. But it wasn't long after that that Debbie saw the paramedics running down the trail with a backboard, and she was so relieved. It had only been 19 minutes since the 911 call, which was a very quick turnaround because they were on a trail, you know?
Yeah, that's quick.
But it was good because she knew her friend had to get out of there quickly if she wanted to survive. As they worked, one of the paramedics was shaking as he tended to Anne because he knew that the mountain lion was down there, and the helicopter flying overhead saw the mountain lion crouch down right down the hillside, which was directly behind that paramedic.
Oh, so they're probably telling him like, okay, don't panic.
Don't panic. Shh,
stay calm. Cougar to your six, though. Cougar directly behind you. Oh, he's crouching. He's really flexing those legs. He really hits the gym. But right. Watch out.
Yeah. So, I mean, good on everyone for doing that because that's a scary situation.
Dude, could you, I mean, just as a paramedic, I mean, these people are brave, period, but this is another level.
That's a different level of brave. Yeah. He was shaking knowing that his back was to this mountain lion that had just brutally mauled a woman. The medevac pilot was thankfully able to maneuver into the area and was able to pick up Anne and lift her to Mission Hospital. In the operating room, the doctors had to basically assess the damage and reconstruct her face. She had half of her face displaced. She had 2 severed facial nerves, multiple bite wounds, 3 and 4 inches deep. She had 20 plus bite wounds to her neck. And yet, her carotid artery, jugular vein, esophagus, and all of those major things were not hit. It was a miracle in that regard.
To have nothing major get nicked is pretty lucky.
For 20 plus bite wounds and not one major artery or vein or whatever to be hit, no esophagus, like, that's weird.
Yeah, it is weird.
But it was amazing because despite all of her injuries, Anne was going to live. Once her vitals were stable, plastic surgeon Dr. Christopher Nolan went to work. For 6.5 hours, he operated, and most of that time was spent cleaning debris out of her facial wounds. The way he described it to Anne later on was like, it was as if someone had peeled back her face and thrown fistfuls of dirt into her face. The next challenge was to find and reattach the ends of her facial nerves, which was an incredibly difficult thing to find and do, but they managed to reattach both of them.
You have 2?
Well, I guess in her face that was like severed, she had 2 that were severed.
I don't know. It's just like when you talk about how much tissue and cells people have.
Right.
Just in, you know, a small part of you. The fact that I'm saying 2 nerves sounds really low.
Listen, I'm not a doctor. I'm a podcaster. All right. I'm just here to tell you the facts.
Just, hey.
And these are the facts.
Let me help you. That's crazy.
Thank you. Thank you
it's
for saying that.
It's kind of crazy. There's 2 nerves in the face.
Thank you for saying that.
It got ripped.
Yeah, I know. But the fact that they were able to find and reattach them is pretty incredible.
Equally crazy.
Yeah. Over 200 stitches and staples held Anne's face together after everything. She survived the attack physically, but at that point needed to deal with the emotional aspect of it. She saw Debbie in the hospital, and the two of them made light of the situation at first and told her it was a good thing that she was there. But a day after surgery, for the first time since the attack, Anne asked to see a mirror. And that was a really difficult thing, because when she looked in the mirror, she couldn't even recognize herself. All she could see was her overly swollen face and stitches everywhere. It was really hard. But then after looking at the pre-operation photos, she felt really lucky to be already where she was as far as her recovery goes. And as horrible as she thought her face looked, it was way better than where she had been 12 hours ago. So she took the mindset that it might not ever be what it was before, but thankfully she was alive and what she was seeing now was only going to get better over time. Incredibly, after only 8 days, she was able to come home from the hospital. Returning home presented new struggles because she wanted to get back to normal life, but anytime she went out, she would have people staring at her or double take. But her injuries only brought her and James closer together because he loved her so much and just wanted her to be happy again. He didn't see the injuries. All he saw was his beautiful wife, is what he said. So he took care of her and loved her just the same, which is beautiful. And as it turned out, Anne wasn't the only victim of that mountain lion that day. When the helicopter was airlifting Anne to the hospital, they made a circular pass and somebody noticed a body on the ground. It was the body of the owner of that stray mountain bike that Anne had passed earlier on the trail. Unfortunately, he did not survive the attack. The victim was identified as 35-year-old Mark Reynolds. So there were two attacks in one day, which was extremely rare. Attacks in these parks in general are rare, and one of the rangers said, California only has had 16 confirmed attacks in the last 125 years.
Wow.
Isn't that really shocking? Yeah.
And then two happen in one day.
Right. Which meant that this mountain lion was a real threat. So California Department of Fish and Game mobilized to track and shoot this mountain lion before it killed somebody else. Which sucks, but, you know, when it's out there mauling people, what are you going to do?
Yeah, kill it.
Yeah. So
I'm sorry, but, you know, somebody you love dies because they didn't take care of this thing.
Yeah. No, it's, you know? They were like, we can't leave this thing out there. It's going to hurt somebody else. So since the attack, Anne has gone under 6 more reconstructive surgeries that Dr. Christopher Nolan did for free. We love that.
He did for free.
Yeah.
Lovely surgeon man.
Yeah, right. And since then, Anne has returned to her normal life as a personal trainer. She looks amazing. She wrote a book titled Skin Deep, sharing her story. Just wanted to throw that one in there. And she hopes that it will inspire others who deal with adversity in their lives. Mountain biking is still a passion of hers. She's extremely grateful for James and, of course, Debbie. She said she doesn't know that she would have been able to do what Debbie did. She said she'd like to think she would do that for her friend, but she doesn't know. She's like, yeah, that was a really brave thing she did. And honestly, I don't know that I could have even done that. So thank you, Debbie.
Yeah, I mean, that's the realest answer you can give. You right. Really don't know.
Yeah, it's like fight or flight. You don't really know until you're put in that situation. So
Debbie is fight.
Debbie is fight. And we know that one for sure. Anne doesn't see what happened to her as a tragedy, though. She looks at it as a miracle that she's still alive, and she is thankful for that. She and James had a daughter they named Elsa after a lioness in the story Born Free. Isn't that full circle?
Like, isn't that Frozen?
Well, yes, but this was in 2000-something, so it wasn't Frozen.
When did they have Elsa?
Pre-Frozen, Disney Frozen.
No, but I'm just saying, how wild would it be to be like 12 and your name's Elsa?
Oh, and then the princess comes about?
They make a movie about you, you know?
You're an ice queen.
You're an ice queen.
Yeah, well, she was named after a lioness, which is way more relevant to Anne's story. But she tried to make deliberate attempts to take what most people would see as a tragedy and make it something positive. She wants her daughter to see that the fear doesn't control her, and she focuses on spending her time with her family and friends and enjoying her life. And that is Anne's story. And, shockingly enough, on February 17th of 2024, okay, so, what, 2 months ago, just about? A group of Washington State women wrestled their friend out of the jaws of a cougar after the animal attacked them while they were riding their bikes.
Another one.
Yeah.
Wait, how many of them?
It was 3 women. One of them got attacked, and 2 of them basically fought the cougar. So,
see, and this is what I was trying to tell you about the lion.
Okay, so here.
3v1.
Yeah, so Carrie Berger, Annie Biolata, and Tish Williams have bicycled.
Bicycled.
It's so late, and we're so delirious. Okay. Have bicycled together for 5 years and ride competitively, and said they were about 19 miles into a trek near Tokel Creek biking trails when a pair of cougars,
Two?
Yeah. jumped out of the nearby bushes. One of the cats, a 75-pound male cougar, dragged Carrie from her bike and held her face in its jaws. This is the same story.
Dude, Trish is going to come down.
She said,
this cougar.
Carrie said, I just remember getting tackled from this side and ending up on the other side of the road, pinned to the ground, and hearing all the ladies rallying and fighting for my life. Annie and Tish quickly jumped into action, attempting to get the cougar off of Carrie. Annie said, I immediately tried to choke the cougar, which was like trying to choke a rock. Then Erica and Tish come over with sticks and a rock, and we're hand-to-hand combat battling this thing. So it turns out that there was, I guess, three of them battling these.
But there were two cougars?
Two cougars.
Where's the second one?
Not doing anything quite yet.
Chilling.
Chilling. Anyway, four women, two cougars. The other cat ran into the hills, while the three of them mounted a counterattack to save Carrie from the grips of the attacker's jaws, at that point around her face and exerting pressure. So pretty much exactly what happened to Anne is what's happening to Carrie, or did happen, literally a month ago. And she was trying to poke at its eyes and nose. But about 15 minutes into the attack, the cyclist said the cat weakened pressure on Carrie, and she was able to slip her face out of its jaws. At that point, the women used a bicycle to pin the mountain lion down while help was en route.
Wait, they pinned the mountain
lion? That's what the article says.
That is so metal.
I know. So Carrie was just like laying nearby as these three other women were like holding this cougar down, I guess.
Dude.
And they would like look at her.
If I'm Carrie, I'm going back to taunt the lion.
What? You think you're so big?
Bitch.
Kick dirt in its face. You're like,
yeah, I would. Fuck that thing. It tried to kill you.
No. Anyway, so she was not doing well, obviously. She just got attacked by a cougar in the face. So they would look at her every once in a while and be like, you good? And she would give like a bloody thumbs up.
Keep it down.
Yeah. Carrie sustained neck and face injuries and was treated at a hospital and released not too long after that. She spent 5 days retrieving treatments for her injuries, and she said, I'm so grateful, and I know how much I owe these ladies, and they're always going to be my family moving forward.
Yeah, this is the other thing I was going to bring up. They're real friends.
Yeah.
Those are the realest of friends.
Yeah. So, shout out to those ladies. And Debbie.
Yeah, I mean, all of them. I mean, that's insane.
I know, but I couldn't believe that story happened literally in February of this year.
Yeah, that's really recent.
I know. I was talking to, I think, my mom about this, like what I was researching or whatever. And she's like, wait, did you see it on the news? And I was like, what? She's like a woman who was cycling who got attacked by a mountain lion. Like, are you talking about the one who was just attacked in Seattle? And I was like, what are you talking about?
No.
I was like, no.
No, but yes.
No, but no, yes no. Soon. Yeah. So it was just like strikingly similar. I couldn't not bring it up.
Yeah. No, it's crazy to me, though, that the cougar was only 75 pounds.
I know. Yeah, I guess, right? It was a small one.
I mean, you think about...
Well, I guess how big are cougars? Let's see.
I don't know. That just seems small. I mean, that could be, what, like a fat yellow lab, you know? That could be a dog.
Yeah, I guess it was a really small one because it says cougars are 120 to 220 pounds for a male and 64 pounds to 140 pounds for a female adult. So maybe it was like a young cougar.
Had to be.
Yeah, it was, I guess, a small one. But still, I mean, it's a cougar for crying out loud.
Yeah, I mean, there's no, everything is muscle with those things.
Yeah.
There's a bag of muscle.
100%. But anyway, that's the end of this episode of Animal Attacks. Why don't we move on to a bit of a palate cleanser, and you can tell me your good thing for the week. Tell me something good.
Well, my good thing is that it was my birthday last weekend.
It sure was.
We did a little karaoke.
We did.
It was fun.
It was very fun. We did a lot of screaming. I had no voice the next day.
Yeah. Well, you know me. I always have a voice, even if it hurts.
Sure.
And Steph got me drunk. It's her fault.
Yeah,
I take no responsibility.
I shoved the alcohol down your throat.
You did.
Okay.
You really did. And yeah, but it was super fun. And it was, yeah, it's my good thing. What's yours?
My good thing is that we get to keep the celebration rolling because our anniversary is next week.
That is true.
Yeah.
It is actually going to be our anniversary at Servers.
For real this time. Every time we go to a restaurant, we've mentioned it before, but anytime any server is like, are you celebrating anything? We always say, yes, we are. It is our anniversary. It doesn't matter what day of the year it is. It's always our anniversary. We're always celebrating because we want a free dessert or appetizer. You know, it doesn't always happen. But I mean, what's the harm in it?
And you gotta not miss a beat. Don't even miss a beat.
Yeah, we don't lie. Share a silly little look. We just always immediately are like, yes, it is. Thank you so
much. You don't look.
No.
You just yes and everything.
Oh, yeah.
And get free stuff.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it doesn't always work. But when it does, it's that much sweeter.
The cake tastes so good.
Yeah.
And I will promote, like, do this. Please do this.
Try it out.
It's the best.
Yeah. But so anyway, our real anniversary is next week, which is pretty exciting. It's been 6 whole years. So anyway,
yeah,
that's my good thing.
On my way to a full PhD.
Yeah, we definitely have a couple degrees in this relationship.
We have a master's.
We definitely have a master's at this point. Yeah. I have a master's in your ass.
And we'll end on that.
Anyways. Thank you all so much for listening. If you would like to check out a bunch of bonus episodes, I think we have one coming out next week. Head over to Patreon, patreon.com/nottodaypodcast. If you would like to see the pictures that we post of all the stories we talk about, check us out on Instagram at nottoday_podcast. Get your merch while it's hot at nottodaypodcast.myshopify.com. If you or anyone you know has a story of survival that you'd like to share with us and possibly hear an upcoming listeners episode, send it to nottodaypodcast@gmail.com. We have a TikTok that is Not Today Podcast and a Twitter that is Not Today Podcast, but the T on the end of podcast is a 3 because that makes sense. And just keep breathing.
Yeah.
Yeah.